negotiations on Brexit and the border are likely to continue into next month. That's the prediction from the Republic's Foreign Minister, Simon Coveney. He also said that we are unlikely to see the UK's proposals on the controversial backstop issue anytime soon. Our economics and business editor, John Campbell, is here. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Hello again. Where do we stand at the moment, John?
It's all about the backstop still. And remember, the backstop is that special arrangement which would have to apply to Northern Ireland if we can't keep the border frictionless through whatever wider deal the EU and UK eventually do. Now, the backstop was effectively agreed in principle way back in December. And then the EU published their version of what it would really mean in March. And that was to say that if all else fails, Northern Ireland would have to stay in the EU's customs union and the single market. UK government didn't like that at all. But we're now into October and we still haven't seen a fully worked out UK version of what the backstop should mean. And we need to have an agreement on the backstop or else there isn't going to be a withdrawal deal. So that's what all the focus on the negotiations in Brussels is about at the moment. There have been speculation the UK government would actually, if you like, publish and bring forward in public what it thought the backstop should amount to. Now it looks unlikely that that will happen. Certainly Simon Coveney, the Republic's foreign minister, was saying yesterday, yes, the UK will be bringing forward something new, but it's only going to be confined to the negotiating room. And in some ways you can understand that, because the UK and the EU don't want like a battle of the texts, yeah, where you've got two documents side by side and we're looking at what changes and what doesn't. So what is likely to happen is the two sides will try to concentrate on actually one agreed document.
And of course, the DUP, they are saying that they must see that text, yeah, before they can continue to support the Tories.
Yeah, because yesterday when Arlene Foster was in Brussels, journalists were asking her, well, have you seen what the UK government is proposing on the backstop? And she said she hadn't. And the DUP's point is they need to see it before they can decide whether they're going to continue to support the government on this issue. So the DUP are going to have to see it at some point, but it's not entirely clear when that will be. What the DUP have warned the British government again is, listen, you do not want a rerun of what happened in December. And that's when the UK government thought it had a deal with the EU. Theresa May was in Brussels sitting down for lunch with Jean-Claude Juncker, boss of the EU Commission.
Phone rings,
and it's the DUP saying, this deal is not going to fly. And then the Prime Minister had to effectively leave that lunch, and then there was a further 4 days of frantic talks in order to shape something which the DUP approved of. And Nigel Dodd, speaking in the Commons last night to the Brexit Secretary, was saying, you do not want a rerun of that. You know what our red lines are, and whenever you come up with has to basically meet those red lines.
So how long can the DUP wait before they say, right, enough is enough, this is another red line of ours, this is our deadline?
In some ways, I don't think the deadline is necessarily in the DUP's gift, because like they said, they can't really jump one way or another until they see what's actually on the table. Now, we could be in a position where we get to Monday and Tuesday of next week and something might be agreed between the EU and the UK in principle. Or it could be that we get to next week's summit and there's nothing actually agreed on paper and the Prime Minister simply makes a verbal presentation to the other EU leaders saying this is where we think we will land on the backstop. The big difficulty is that the UK government needs to have a backstop plan which the EU thinks would be workable in a situation where it actually had to be introduced. And what's been talked about is a plan which would involve the whole of the UK staying in the EU's customs arrangements for a temporary period and Northern Ireland effectively continuing to follow some EU rules on product standards, effectively around food and agriculture. But that could mean some limited checks on goods moving from Great Britain into Northern Ireland. I think the EU would probably go for that. But yesterday, the DUP spent a lot of time in both Brussels and Westminster saying that would not be acceptable to them. So I think we're reaching a position where either there has to be an enormous amount of backpedalling by the EU, or else the government is going to find itself in a confrontation with its DUP partners. We could have this situation where the Prime Minister would have to say, this is the deal. This is the only one that's going to work. You don't like it, but you're going to have to accept it. Now, in that situation, what is going to happen?
Yeah, will she have the numbers to stay in power?
Yeah. Will she be in a position where she will find herself having to confront the DUP and what will happen then? Because that is certainly a path I think we could find ourselves going down in the next month or so, if not the next couple of weeks.
John Campbell, always a pleasure. The journey continues. This week has also seen a new survey from the University of Edinburgh and Cardiff University. You might want to respond to this, 0330 80 55 55 on the phones. It suggests that 87% of the mostly unionist advocates for leaving the EU believe the collapse of the peace process is justifiable if Brexit is delivered. I spoke to one of the academics behind the survey, Professor Ilse Henderson.
Yeah, Leave voters in Ireland, almost 90%, so 87%, believe that jeopardising the peace process in Northern Ireland is a price worth paying in order to get Brexit. And less than 1% said absolutely not, no way, and the rest are.
So just so we're 100% clear, 90% of Leave voters you spoke to in Northern Ireland regard sacrificing the peace process as an acceptable price for Brexit.
Mm-hmm. 87%, yeah.
That seems like an incredible number. Were you surprised by that result?
Yes. Yeah. I thought I've checked these data about six different ways, turned them upside down, turned them all around. I couldn't. When we got those data, and we just stared at them for a while, and then we ran checks. We ran checks by what party you voted for in the past, what party you tend to, you know, do you think of yourself as a supporter of a particular party? We've got different questions
what kind of results were you getting from that, those kind of questions? Like, what type of people were you talking to?
Well, it's entirely this. It's the same figures that just keep coming out. There's a clear majority of unionist Leave voters in Northern Ireland who think that jeopardising the peace process is a price worth paying in order to get Brexit. That's how they answered that question.
In Northern Ireland, according to your research, 86%, let's talk about this again, of Leave voters believe Scottish independence would be acceptable. So you've got 87%, almost 90%, that believe Leave voters here in Northern Ireland believe the peace process is an acceptable price to pay for Brexit. Yeah. And also that removing Scottish independence, so breaking up the UK, would also be acceptable.
Yeah, yeah. And that, I think, for me, was the most shocking figure. Not because it wasn't shocking to find what we were finding with Northern Ireland, but because Scottish independence is an issue about the territorial integrity of the United Kingdom. And so, for us, that was a suggestion that things are fundamentally changing in terms of people's understanding of unionism and what the union is and who the union includes and who we mean when we say we're part of a union.
To clarify, the majority of the people you spoke to who were Leave voters were indeed from the unionist community, and they were in a huge, nearly 90% happy to see both the destruction of the peace process as a price to pay for Brexit. I know I keep going over this, but I'm just trying to make sure I've got it right. And also the removal of Scotland as a price to pay Scottish independence.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, another way you can look at it is, so those figures that we released, if you look at the price worth paying for Brexit on the Northern Ireland question and the Scottish question, we broke that down by Brexit vote, but we also broke it down by national identity. And the question we used for national identity, the Moreno question, doesn't work well in Northern Ireland because you don't have two obvious polls for identity. You've got overlapping identity structures. And so when we released those data for Northern Ireland, what we did was we used what Lucid Talk use as a way of dividing people up. And so it's what political community you believe you're a part of. Are you part of a unionist political community or a Republican?
And what did that show you?
Political community. Well, that's 70% of people who describe themselves as unionist believe that Scottish independence is a price worth paying. So you're getting the same kinds of figures no matter how you divide these data up. If you're looking at Leave voters or Conservative voters or Unionist voters, they're overlapping communities.
And what about the peace process and that particular question in terms of it being a worthwhile sacrifice or a price worth paying for Brexit?
It's the same figure, 70%. So 70% on both think it's worth it in order to get Brexit. So we see the same trends across England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, that Brexit has become this, or Brexit vote has become this kind of heuristic device through which you evaluate all politics, and everything is sort of refracting through that lens. So it is we're seeing, before we saw differences in terms of whether people like the European Union or not, but after the referendum, what we're finding is that those dividing lines are much sharper, and they're influencing okay. how people then look at politics. So we're seeing a clear difference between how Leave voters in, across all those territories interpret politics and how Remain voters interpret politics. So the Leave voters think okay. that all those things are a price worth paying, and the Remainers absolutely do not.
It is all fascinating, and I think there will be many people here surprised. Can you just give us finally just another a bit of an upsum of the type of people that you spoke to, for example, in Northern Ireland? Because there will be people that will question your results and will say, well, are they getting a fair spread of the people that live here?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I mean, we've been polling since 2011, and we typically poll annually in England. When we have extra money, we've got like research grants or an extra budget, we can usually poll in Scotland and Wales. And this year we were more successful and we managed to get more money, so we were able for the first time to poll in Northern Ireland. On the advice of researchers, we felt that the online panel for Lucid Talk was in far healthier shape than the online panel for that YouGov manage in Northern Ireland. So we went to Lucid Talk, and we looked at all their back data, and we found that they were the most accurate poller in terms of kind of predicting vote intention before elections. So we're happy with the quality of the data. They talked to over 1,000 people. 1,089 people. We've got a spread of ages. We've got a spread across political communities. The sample is split kind of roughly 50-50 between broadly unionist and broadly nat or Republican constitutional positions. We've got the expected spread in terms of party ID, occupation, age, gender. So it's an online sample. All our research is online sample. They're not probability samples, but we find time and time again that year on year we get really consistent results, regardless of when we're polling, whether we tweak the question slightly and we ask it a different way. We're finding consistent things. So there's nothing in the data that give us cause for concern.
Okay.
Certainly.
Well, do you know what? I'm intrigued to see what the callers think this morning. 030-30-80-55-55. Professor Henderson, thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you.
With me now is Peter Gagan, journalist from the Open Democracy, and Frank Shivers from the NI Conservatives. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Frank, first of all, with you, were you surprised by any of the results from this survey?
Absolutely surprised, and it sort of goes right against what you hear on the doorsteps and what we heard when we have MEPs over. I recently hosted a Rupert Matthews MEP, and a main concern of his and what he wanted to come to the province to find out was the peace process in jeopardy, because that's certainly what the EU were peddling to him. And we went out in Belfast, and we basically just, you know, spoke to people in different communities. We went to Bangor, we went to Ard, and not one person talked about the peace process being in jeopardy. And in fact, the overwhelming feedback was, if it is, you know, does it question the validity of the peace process? And indeed, the sort of Scottish question and independence of Scotland, you know, I find it very difficult to believe that any unionist would advocate Brexit over the breakup of the United Kingdom. Unionists see Brexit as a unification of the United Kingdom and making us stronger going forward.
Well, going by this survey, it suggests otherwise, Frank Shivers. Let me bring Peter in at this point. Professor Henderson is saying that this was evidence that Brexit was dislodging long-held red lines about the union. You know, how can you consider yourself a unionist if you would be willing to see the UK broken up, the Scotland removed, given independence?
I think one of the fascinating things about this study, and I'd agree with Frank that the findings are really remarkable, is that what you're seeing is across the United Kingdom, and you're seeing it in Northern Ireland too, almost a kind of a diminishing interest in the Union, in the United Kingdom. You look at all the findings, you're seeing it in England and Wales and Scotland, and actually surprisingly in Northern Ireland, especially among Conservatives and Leave voters, a general sense, of, which is really surprising, that they don't have as much interest in the Union as you would imagine. You would think the things that would be completely anathema to a Unionist would, you know, things like Scottish independence would be very, very high up in their minds. It would be something they were very worried about. You know, to be concerned, you know, it's not something that, it's not as if this thing isn't in the news. You know, the SNP conferences this week, we've been hearing a lot about, you know, Scottish independence for years now. It's not like it's a new idea. And you think that that would be something that was very much in their minds. But if you look at the data, that's not just suggesting not only about Scottish independence, but more broadly about how much interest people in different parts of the Union have about each other and how much they think that the Union is something that's completely central to their identity. This survey suggests that's, you know, it almost feels like an anti-politics. It feels at less that the Unionists are interested, you know, the pull of the Union is less about the Union itself and more about, you know, rejection of the European Union and a rejection of other things. But it's, I think that's one of the most striking aspects of this, Unionists across the United Kingdom seem to be, and I think we've had this for a while, kind of missing a narrative of what the Union is, and this is very clear in this.
It could well be, Peter, that it's not that they are not interested in the Union, but they are maybe more interested in Brexit and what that could bring.
Oh, definitely. I think that's true. But then that I think is quite, you know, if you're a Unionist, that should be something that I think is quite worrying. If, you know, because again, that's kind of an anti-politics. It's like we want to get out of the European Union. You know, bear in mind, a lot of these voters are people who, if you polled them 5 years ago, leaving the European Union wouldn't have been one of the most driving forces of their politics. So, and I think that's what's really interesting from what Ilse Henderson is saying, is how Brexit has become this driving force. And I think, you know, for Unionists, it's, you know, Theresa May has talked about this precious union. But beyond that, I think there's an awareness across kind of what you might call, you know, thinking unionism, not just in Northern Ireland, but across the United Kingdom, unionism writ large, that unionism needs to find a narrative. It needs to find a story about itself. And if you look at, if you drill down into the findings of this, beyond just the concerns about the peace process and Scottish independence, what you see is a kind of lack of interest in the other parts of the Union from people who would, you would expect to be Unionists. You would think the Conservatives and Leave voters across the UK are the most likely people to say, I'm a Unionist, I believe in the United Kingdom. And the absence of a kind of shared interest and a shared goal and a kind of shared interest in some sort of common policy across the United Kingdom would actually worry me if I was a Unionist more than the headline figures about Scottish independence and the Northern Irish peace process.
Okay, Frank Shivers, the research suggests that English Conservatives would support the collapse or would feel the collapse of the Irish peace process, 75% of them, as a price for Brexit. So what does that say about Theresa May and her focus on the Union and the people that in fact support her and vote for her?
I think, Vinny, two things I would say about that. Theresa May has continually shown her support in speeches and documentation and statements that she's made, continually supported the Union and said that the Union is safe under a Conservative government. That's without question.
Yes, and I understand but Theresa May, whereas she does hold up as a precious Union, but this suggests that the others that vote for her, the constituents, do not.
Well, once again, Vinny, that flies completely at odds with what I experienced in the 4 days I was at the Conservative Party conference speaking to Conservatives and Middle England Conservatives, especially because I went on the 4 days to really try and promote Northern Ireland in relation to the Union and Conservatism. And there is a lack of understanding, without question, about Northern Ireland politics. And it was quite, well, not funny, but it was stark that a lot of Conservative people at the conference felt that the DUP were the Conservatives in Northern Ireland. And I was there sort of getting the message that, no, we have Conservatives in Northern Ireland who electorally run against the DUP, and there was a lack of understanding. So I would sort of suggest maybe that understanding has given up that result.
Let's go to the phones on this. John in Belfast. Good morning, John.
I can remember a few years ago, Vinny, that the late Reverend Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness had came together and they were called the Chuckle Brothers, etc. But they had this vision for Northern Ireland of being its own independent state, getting their own independence, no allegiance to anyone. Like, I think that's the way we need to go instead of having this worry about Brexit. And the DUP have that in their hands at the moment. They can make that call and have us independent. We're going to benefit from both sides of the economy.
What do you think, John, it says about going back to that issue of the Conservatives in England and their view, according to this survey, about what is worth Brexit? So Scottish independence, 79%, which would technically mean the UK does not continue as is. It's different. It's taken apart. And the collapse of the Irish peace process, 75%, an acceptable price of Brexit.
That's just dinosaurs again, is it not? Like, we're going back to them, us. Like, it's very clear that we need to be our own independent state. We need to be answering to our own problems. We can't have someone dictating to us.
Is it about being dictated to, or is it about, to an extent, the priorities that others have in relation to Northern Ireland and what happens here?
I think unionist people think they're being dictated to. I think nationalist people think they're being dictated to. So I think that's why that we're having this problem.
OK, John, thank you. Frank, last word on this to you before we move on.
Well, I would just say, an independent state in Northern Ireland, I mean, the first thing we say is where would we block the $11.2 billion that Westminster sent to us? But I do feel that we need representation in Northern Ireland, local representation, and really our elected representatives need to get back to work to stand up for us.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.